No matter what documentation is offered for miracles, many people will say, but have you seen one yourself? I have a cousin who was struck with a virulent case of hepatitis C a few years ago. He received every sort of treatment, including interferon, but his platelet counts dropped alarmingly and his viral count from the hepatitis soared. A few months ago, he turned to an energy healer in India, who passed his hands over my cousin's liver to extract the disease entity. In a short time, his platelet counts were back to normal, and there were no symptoms of any disease. To me, this is a miracle. It seems to be a teachable one as well. You can take most people and school them successfully in the art of healing touch, which requires a practitioner to run her hands over the body a few inches over the skin to feel where there are energy hotspots, detected as a patch of warm air over that region. The practitioner then moves this energy to dispel it, and in many cases some healing is achieved, usually in the form of more rapid recovery than from conventional treatments. Things are real in the quantum world if you make them real, and that is done by manipulating light. Any miracle may be within reach if only we begin to alter our conception of who we are and how our minds work. When he realizes that he is bathed in light, the feeling that comes over a miracle worker is one of intense love. When Jesus said, "I am the light," he meant, "I am totally in God's force field." No one could claim that stage 6 alone reveals God's love. We are all in the force field of love, but in early stages of spiritual growth, its power is weak. We waver and can easily be thrown off in other directions. Only after years of cleaning out negative emotions and old conditioning does a person realize that God's force is immensely powerful. When this occurs, nothing can pull the mind away from love. Love as a personal emotion is transmuted into cosmic energy. It takes a quantum leap in consciousness to love God all the time. Yet when the leap is finally made, there is really no God to love, not as a separate object. The fusion of the worshipper and what he worships is nearly complete, but that is enough to animate everything in creation. This is the love, Rumi declares, that brings our body to life. Sometimes God is felt with ecstasy, but just as often there can be pain, anguish, and confusion. This mixture of feelings reminds us that two entities are coming into conjunction. One is spirit, the other is body. God's presence overcomes the most intense conditions of pain and suffering. Grace offers constant support in everyday life. If God is like a force field in stage 6, grace is his magnetic pull. Grace adapts itself to each person. We make our choices, some of which are good for us, some bad, and then grace shapes the results. When you feel you have been touched by grace, this is your clue that God exists and cares about what happens to you. Whether operating on the level of a saint or a criminal, grace is the ingredient that saves karma from being heartlessly mechanical. A thief who commits robbery 100 times would seem to be set on his course, but at any given moment, he has the opportunity to stop and mend his ways. The impulse to move towards spirit is the result of grace. It is so difficult to be good that eventually a person must give up. This is a realization that arrives in stage 6. In Christianity, the struggle is predestined to end with the victory of good, since God is more powerful than Satan. But in Hinduism, the forces of light and darkness will battle eternally. In stage 6, a person is visionary enough to see this. He still retains a conception of good. It is the force of evolution that lies behind birth, growth, love, truth, and beauty. He also retains a conception of evil. It is the force that opposes evolution. We would call it entropy, leading to decomposition, dissolution, inertia. However, God created both because both are needed. God is in the evil as much as in the good. The saint sees the sinner inside himself, just as the saint accepts evil as calmly as any other occurrence. The working out of the soul stands apart, and at some point the dance of good and evil becomes one. When stage six dawns, the purpose of life changes. Instead of striving for goodness and virtue, the person aims to escape bondage. God's force field, grace, exerts an attraction to pull the soul out of the range of karma. The most enlightened saint still eats, drinks, and sleeps. However, all of this energy gets used in a different way. Good deeds have their own rewards, just as bad deeds do. What if you don't want any reward at all, but just to be free? This is the state Buddhists call nirvana, the release from karmic influences, the end of the dance of opposites. Since only God is free from cause and effect, to want nirvana means that you want to attain God realization. For the sake of keeping society together, religions hold it as a duty to respect goodness and abhor evil. How can God want us to be good and yet want us to go beyond good? The answer takes place entirely in consciousness. In stage six, the alchemy of turning evil into a blessing is a mystery that is solved by longing for liberation. In stage six, little room is left for any kind of wrongdoing, but a person could lose the distinction between holiness and false idealism. Holiness is marked by a selfless innocence. Trying to be holy is not innocent. It may be well-intentioned, but in stage six, idealism has no place. Only the real thing will do. Idealism is born of the mind. In stage six, the saint may sing about God and even speak about him, but the holy relationship is so private that nothing can break in.